You are listening to a sermon by Heather Pauls Murray, recorded on Sunday, October 19th, 2014, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is my first time publicly speaking in a church. And I'm really glad you have a podium so that you don't have to see my hands shaking. I called my talk The Head and the Heart, which on second thought I think is a bit of a misnomer. I think if I was to rename it now, I would choose something like Faith is a Journey. So here goes. It always surprises me how memory can be very selective. Sometimes I remember things that might seem insignificant to others, but made a big impact on me. So I'm going to tell a story that involves this congregation. And John Friesen, you'll have to forgive me for springing this on you, because you feature strongly in this story. When I was 18 years old, I came here to Point Grey to live at the Menno Simon Center. So this was 13 years ago. And I'm guessing there might be some Point Grey students here today. Is that right? Yeah, hi. When I came here, I had the conflicting emotions of feeling totally overwhelmed and out of my depth at UBC, while also feeling rather full of myself. One weekend, my parents were visiting, and after the service, my dad and I got chatting with John Friesen. He asked about my studies, and I said, "Oh, I'm just in first year." I assume he could sense all the meaning that I'd wrapped into that sentence. "Oh, I'm only back here. I'm not there yet. The stage I'm at is insignificant. It's a transient step until I go on to achieve greater things with my life." Without missing a beat, he said something along the lines of, "Well, Heather, every stage has its own values, its joys, and moments of learning. You're not just in first year. This is one of many important times in your life." As John walked away, my dad leaned over with a smirk and said, "Be careful what you say to a psychologist." So true, Dad. John Friesen had, of course, nailed it. I greatly appreciate that short interaction. And maybe John doesn't remember it, but I've often gone back to those comments. He was right. First year had its own value, its joys, and its lessons. That year, I made a lot of friends at the Menno Simon Center. Some of you have been here for a while. You might remember Monica Penner, Mark Northey, Jeff Schultz, Katrine Karsmaker, and Rachel Klippenstein, to name a few, and all of these people are still dear people to me. So we would stay up until 3 a.m. talking about predestination and free will. We agonized over interpretations of Bible verses. We felt emotional and physical stress over religious and philosophical questions, like who decides what morality is? Does God intervene? What is truth? Is love just something biological so that our species survives? Topics like these were so raw and painful and agonizing and important. I had to figure them out, and I couldn't sleep at all. At the time, I could have used this verse that I've gone to sometimes, Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 16. "Whenever I tried to become wise and learn what goes on in the world, I realized that you could stay awake night and day and never be able to understand what God is doing. However hard you try, you will never find out. The wise may claim to know, but they don't." Well, I tried really hard to figure it all out. And if I did take a stance on any of these issues, then I better have all the Bible verses, scholarly quotes, and something said by C.S. Lewis to back it up. Or such was the culture with those Menno Simons friends and my friends and fellow students at my classes at UBC. Because without sources and footnotes, opinion was just based on emotion. An emotion was nothing. Reason and objective analytical thought were the only ways to arrive at spiritual conclusions. So you might be picking up on my sarcasm right now. In my frantic search to justify my spirituality through reason, I didn't know that it was life experiences that would bring the wisdom of the Bible to life. That my spirituality would deepen with joys, amazing hikes, dinner parties, traveling, and sorrows, broken hearts, sickness, and conflict, to name a few. So now I feel content to live a spiritual life without rationalizing everything, to embrace the journey. And yet when Andrei Pekovich asked me to speak here, my first thought was, me? I didn't go to Regent. I don't know who wrote what book about whatever people are talking about. I'm just taking care of my kids and doing housework. But then, the still small voice of John Friesen said, you're not just taking care of your kids and doing housework. Every stage has its own value, its joys, and moments of learning. You're not just a mom. This is one of many important times in your life. And that comforted me that I might have something to say today. I asked Andre what I should talk about, and he said it helps to meditate on what you've been praying about recently. And my prayers always go something like this. Dear God, thank you so much for my husband and children. They make my heart seize up like it's going to explode. Please, God, don't let anything bad ever happen to them. Keep them protected from serious diseases. Please keep us all safe from car accidents. Please don't let anything bad ever happen to me or Gabe so our kids can grow up with both of us to love them and teach them. And right now, for me, the rest is details. My spiritual life is very much based on experience and emotion. Maybe that's why this talk is heavy on the stories and not the Bible verses just yet. But I think that the stage in life I'm at right now, some Bible stories and verses are starting to make sense when they really didn't to me before. I do value scholarly study, and being a student was a wonderful time of learning. Now some verses I didn't understand then have new meaning and clarity. Life experiences are illuminating the scripture along the journey. First, there's the chapter of, there's 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which we read earlier. I'd always get hung up on this verse, on verse 8. Love is eternal. This is, I think, NSRV version, or NRSV. There are inspired messages, but they are temporary. There are gifts of speaking in strange tongues, but they will cease. There is knowledge, but it will pass. For our gifts of knowledge and of inspired messages are only partial. But when what is perfect comes, then what is partial would disappear. Reading this verse, I always felt a little rubbed the wrong way that knowledge is brushed aside. It'll pass. It's only partial. And I thought, no. The most important thing is knowledge. Knowledge is eternal. It gets sent down through generations, through books and stories in universities. Love is the fluffy stuff on the side. But now I know that all my knowledge didn't help me figure out all the details about God. But love helps. Knowledge expanded my horizons. It expanded my understanding of God and of people's interpretations of God. It enriches everything in my life. But did I figure out God? No. But now through what I've lived through, I know that love eclipses everything. I didn't know public speaking would make my mouth so dry. Then there's the idea of love and personal sacrifice. John 15, verses 12 to 13 says, "My commandment is this, love one another, just as I love you. The greatest love a person can have for his friend is to give his life for them." The first part of that scripture always just trotted along and made sense. Yes, love one another, the golden rule. The second part always felt like I was at a game show and someone just hit the buzzer. Wrong answer. The greatest love a person can have for his friend is to give his life for them? I'm never laying down my life for anyone, not figuratively and certainly not literally. That's how I felt. But now that sacrifice is happening and transforming everything for me. Of course, in a very first world country sort of way. Before I had kids, I had a snazzy job I loved. I read for hours in cafes. I went to music concerts constantly. I spent hours sewing. I spent money on whatever I wanted. And my house was a mess. But what little housework my husband and I achieved was done equally. Now nothing's the same. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I do most of the housework because my husband does most of the money earning. And that's what works for us right now. I don't like doing dishes. I don't like cleaning the bathroom. I don't like getting gunk off the high chair. I don't like getting up in the middle of the night. I don't even like getting up at 6:30 in the morning. Although I love doing laundry, and I'm not even joking. It's a good thing because I do it every single day. In some ways, it feels like I'm no longer my own person for a time. Yes, I'm still an individual, but only when my children are sleeping. I now know what it's like to sacrifice a huge part of myself for others out of love. In past years, I might have looked at someone like me and thought, surely you can still do everything you used to do and still raise a family. Well, I can't. And going back to that verse, sacrifice is the greatest love you can give, and I'm happy to give my family that gift. For me, giving the gift of sacrifice started when I became a parent. But of course, it happens in many stages of life. My next door neighbor, Betty, tells me that she is part of the sandwich generation. On Mondays and Thursdays, she babysits her grandsons. And on Tuesdays and Fridays, she goes to her ailing parents' house to clean, cook, and do their laundry. It exhausts her, and she hardly has the energy to tend to her beautiful garden, which is her passion in her retirement. But she couldn't imagine it any other way. She tells me, oh, thank you. And she tells me, I'm tired, but I love it. She has to sacrifice and sometimes let the weeds pop through. Another example. In my last year at UBC, my friend Leslie dropped out of all of her classes. She was in her last year too. Leslie might be one of the smartest person I know, one of the smartest people I know, and the most talented writer I know personally. Dropping her classes would definitely mean messing up her GPA, as it was too late to withdraw her classes. It would postpone graduation and postpone her grad school applications. But her friend Jen was hospitalized for mental health issues. She needed emotional support, practical support, and all the love in the world. Leslie was there at her bedside every day, being a listening ear, doing boring paperwork, getting her out for walks in the fresh air. It pains me to say this, but at the time I didn't really get it. How could she sacrifice her studies? Can't someone else be there for Jen? But to Leslie, dropping her courses was the tiniest blip on her radar compared to what her friend needed. She served out of love, out of sacrificial love. The verse, "The greatest love a person can have for his friends is to give his life for them," I struggled with so much when I looked at it from a more intellectual point of view. Why should I give up anything? I didn't look at the stories around me or actually have any profoundly challenging experiences of my own. But when I did, and when I saw challenges facing my friends, the wisdom of the Bible came to life and met me on the journey. It's a good idea, Henry. I'm gonna start. Another aspect of the Bible that I understand more now than I used to is the metaphor of God the Father. Throughout the Bible, God is our Father, loving and teaching us as a parent. I understood parental love as a child, only up to a point. As the child of two wonderful parents, I knew I was loved, but I still don't think I got it. During the summer between first and second year, when I was 19 years old, I decided to go up to the Yukon and live in a tent in the woods for 4 months and get a job, or maybe three, in Dawson City. I gathered up my camping gear, I packed a bag, and was about to head to the Greyhound station when my mom said, "Heather, if you're really going to do this, then I'm buying you a plane ticket, because the Greyhound station stops at the armpit of every town." I took her up on it. And at the airport, I noticed my parents were a bit misty-eyed when I said goodbye. Puzzled and oblivious, I wondered, I'll only be gone for 4 months. It's not really that big of a deal. I didn't realize it would be difficult to send your precious child into the wilderness to fend for herself amongst grizzly bears, drunken miners, and a million unknown, potentially creepy people. Well, I get it now. My guts churn when Hamish falls off the couch, or when Rose bonks her head on the patio stairs, and you can see her forehead for evidence today. When my one-year-old does something like this, I have to post it on Facebook, because I'm biologically programmed to think that she is more artistic than any other one-year-old I've ever met. If God loves us like a parent, I think I understand the wellspring of bubbly love for us, the concern for us, wanting what's best for us, and hoping we make good choices. I think this kind of love is also closely aligned with the love we have with our spouses. I want what's best for Gabe. I worry a little when he's out mountain biking. It's love where you want your loved one to reach out and grab what life has to offer, but stay safe at the same time. If God is like our Father, then I imagine him excited to see us go out into the world and experience all its joys and sorrows, but also cringing when we do something dumb. Which brings me to my next thought. I wonder if God is our Father because we're so much like children. A stage of my life has taught me that kids ask for things they can't have over and over again, hoping that this time will change our minds. They cry when we pull something out of their hands, even if it's broken glass. I remember my son having a meltdown because I wouldn't let him jump into a bonfire. My dad likes to tease me about how when I was a toddler, whenever he tried to teach me something, I'd always look up at him and say, "I know, Dad, I know." And I still catch myself doing that sometimes. But truthfully, I always go to him for advice. My life journey has taught me that the biblical metaphor of God the Father doesn't just mean that he loves us. It could also mean that we don't always listen to God, and we get frustrated when we don't get what we want. But God probably sees something we don't see. There's a really cheesy country song by Garth Brooks called "Thank God for Unanswered Prayer." In it, Garth recounts how he runs into his high school sweetheart, and she doesn't seem very nice. And he says, "Phew, thank God for unanswered prayer. It's a good thing we don't always get what we want." My last observation is that there's a time for everything. There are many stages in our journeys. To lead into this, I'll read a very familiar passage from Ecclesiastes that my mom insisted I read from the King James Version. I know we've all heard this passage many times before, But I find that it's like hearing a favorite song on the radio or a favorite hymn like the two I chose today that you've heard thousands of times. Even though you know every word, it feels good and enriching to go over it over and over again. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. I had a time of traveling, studying, and adventuring. I had a time of pouring everything into my career and marriage. Right now is a time for marriage and children and lessons of love and sacrifice. Sometimes it feels to me like certain passages from the Bible lie dormant within me, things I've heard but don't click, and then something challenging happens and I get it and it's there. There's so much more that I don't understand, and there are so many other stages of life to come. What verses will suddenly make sense when my kids are teenagers? Hopefully not the prodigal son. I've always struggled with that one. But joking aside, there'll always be times when lessons from the Bible will suddenly become illuminated. When I'm back at my career, when my kids are older, when I take up new interests or new causes, when I'm an empty nester, when the kids get married, when I'm an oma, when I retire. Each one of us is dwelling in a certain stage of life. Students, careers, single, married, parents or not, retired, you name it. And you're not just there. Every stage has its own value, its joys, and moments of learning. You're not just, this is one of many important times in your life. Thank you.